Right. Good morning, everyone. Let's begin. So we're gonna go a little bit off topic from Tehillim, just for this week, being that we stand here on Tanis Esther, just a few hours away from Purim. So I wanted to focus a little bit on a Purim related topic. A number of years ago, I actually spoke about this topic at a Wit Yom Iyun, but we're gonna take a little bit of a, so even if you remember that shir, it's okay. But we're gonna take a little bit of a lot of a different approach in understanding today. So I wanna begin with a simple Gemara. Amar Rava, Mechayiv Inish Levasume Bepuria Adelo Yoda Bein Araham Lebarach Mordechai. Rava said, a person is obligated. Now, the word levasume, as you notice, is translated over here as intoxicated. But in fact, again, the etymological root of levasume is like bosem, which literally means to become fragrant. So interestingly enough, the Talmudic word for inebriation is levasume, because when one drinks enough wine, so what happens? They begin to smell like the wine is, or they become fragrant with the wine. So Rava says a person is obligated to become intoxicated on Purim until he doesn't know the difference between Ar Haman and Baruch Mordechai. Cursed is Haman, blessed is Mordechai. Okay, so Rava makes a statement. Rav of Rabbi Zeira of the Su'udas Purim Bahadi Adadi. Now the Gemara tells a story. So Rav and Rabbi Zeira decided to have their Purim Su'uda together. If soon, they got drunk. Kam Rabba Shachte l'Rabbi Zeira. Rabba got up and he killed Rabbi Zeira. He was drunk, unaware of his actions, killed Rabbi Zeira. L'machar ba'i rachami v'achye, the next day, Rabba davened to HaKadosh Baruch Hu for compassion and revived Rabbi Zeira. Okay, so the story had a happy ending. But here's what's interesting. L'shana amr le ne'seymar v'navid sudas porim b'hadi adadi. Next year, Rabba came to Rabbi Zeira, said, Rabbi Zeira, I have a great idea. Let's do Purim Su'uda together. Let's have Purim Su'uda together. So Rabbi Zeira says, thank you, but no thank you. Amar lei, lo b'chol shaita u'shaita misrach ishnisa. To which Rabbi Zeira responded, miracles do not happen all of the time. So it's very nice that it worked out okay last year. HaKadosh Baruch Hu intervened and he saved me last year. But we simply cannot rely or bank on miracles, and therefore thanks, but no thanks. How about we'll just send each other shalach manos and we'll call it even. So of course, this Gemara is very interesting because this Gemara serves as the source. Now, what's interesting to note is Rava's wording is chayiv. A person is obligated, which of course is very interesting because the entirety of Purim, of course we know, is a rabbinic yom tov, is midrabanan. So the notion that we have certain rabbinic mitzvos, we have mitzvos ultimately, again, a mikra megillah, the megillah, mishloach manos, sending packages of food, mataron salyon, gifts to the poor, and there is a mitzvah of su'uda. There is a mitzvah of celebration. This mitzvah that Rav is describing, this chiyuv that he calls it, of becoming inebriated or intoxicated or drunk, is part of su'uda, is part of the celebration of su'uda, which is very important, which is why there is no concept of drinking on Purim outside of the su'uda, outside of the meal. A person could drink whatever a responsible adult wants to drink, but one can't label it simchas or mishteh Purim unless it is part and parcel of the su'uda, part of the celebratory meal. So the question, of course, is, what do we do with this Gemara? Because on one hand, you have a statement of Rava, and no one's arguing. Remember, there's not like very often the Talmud will record a statement from one rabbi, and then there'll be another rabbi who gives a competing or conflicting statement. Here, that doesn't occur. Here, Rava makes a statement. No one is arguing with that statement. So first of all, just to point out that number two, the Marsha says, the Marsha, we're not going to do it inside, just tell it to you outside. The Marsha is very bothered by this story because, understandably so, the notion of Rabba, the notion of people becoming drunk and doing silly or foolish things that I understand, but the notion of one person getting up and killing another is a dramatic different level of behavior. So the Marsha is very bothered by this idea that the great sage Rabba would have killed Rabbi Zeira. He interprets it differently. He understands instead that what it literally means is that Rabba was pushing Rabbi Zeira to drink more and more and more until Rabbi Zeira was on the brink of death, alcohol poisoning. So therefore, again, that's what it means that he killed Rabbi Zeira. Not literally that he killed him, but that he pushed him until he got dangerously ill. And then Rabba went in and davened on his behalf and he was healed. The question I want to try to explore today a little bit is, how do we understand this halacha? You know, one of the beautiful things that we have in Judaism is, you know, a state, and it's an ideal or a hashkafa that's really encapsulated in Maimonian thought. The Rambam says that Ezuhi derech shiyavar loa adam, what path should man take in life? So the Rambam writes the derech hamamutza, the middle path. The middle path is always the path in life. Do not be an extremist. Do not be a fundamentalist. Always measure what you do and try to find that golden mean. Well, here, what Rav is suggesting is not measured and is not the middle path as well. What Rav is suggesting is out-and-out alcoholic excess. Given all of the dangers that could ensue, and we'll discuss them with alcoholic excess, so what is Rav exactly telling us to do? And really, like, what is the halacha? Remember, halacha, and this is very important to understand as well, halacha is not simply a series of do's and don'ts. People often think that's what it is. But halacha, Jewish law, is the way that the rabbis communicated to us moral and ethical ideas as well. So in every single do or don't, there is a deeper message, a deeper idea, or a deeper ideal. Say, here I have the rabbis telling me that I should drink a lot on Purim. Okay, what is the rabbinic message that is being conveyed to us, the Jewish people? So let's analyze this first a little bit from a halachic perspective. So first of all, interesting enough, if you look at number three, the Rush, and you can give you a little bit of a biography here, 1250 to 1327, was the Talmud Muvak, the primary disciple of the Maharam of Rotenburg. So the Rush writes something very interesting. He just says, Amarava, Mechayiv inish levasume bepuri adlo yodar bein barach mordechai lo arahaman. Now, the Rush, Rabbeinu Asher, is one of the first codifiers of halacha. So how does the Rush codify halacha? He'll quote a statement from the Talmud. If he agrees with the statement, he'll just quote it verbatim. If he disagrees with the statement, he'll quote the statement, then he'll give his own commentary. It's interesting to note that when the Rush quotes this statement of Rava, he doesn't change it, he doesn't modify it, he in no way alters any part of it, which indicates to us what? That he accepts it. So the Rush says, this indeed is the halacha, no one's arguing with it, a person is obligated, not just okay, a person is obligated to become inebriated, to become intoxicated on Purim. That's the Rush. Take a look at number four. The Ran, Rabbeinu Nissim, he writes a little bit differently. He writes the following. He quotes, skip down a little bit, V'kasa Rabbeinu Ephraim, it's the last two lines. You see the second to last line starts with the word Ephraim. He quotes the Rabbeinu Ephraim Zal, who says, Me'ahu uvda dekam rabba, v'shachte l'rabbi zir ki de'isa b'gemara, idchile memra derava, v'lo shapir dami l'me'avet hachi. So the Ran says something amazing. The Ran says, no, Rush, I'll apologize, but you're absolutely wrong. Because look at the flow of the Gemara. We're just focusing a little bit just on the halacha first. So the Ran says, look at the flow of the Gemara. How does the Gemara start? You have a statement of Rava. What did Rava say? Person should become intoxicated on Purim until they don't know their sin, Arhaman and Baruch Mordechai. Then what does the Talmud do immediately afterwards? Tells you a story of two rabbis, Rabbi and Rabbi Zera, who did what? Exactly as Rava said. And what were the results? Catastrophic. Were it not for divine intervention, would have been catastrophic. So Rabbeinu Ephraim, quoted by the Ran, says something very interesting. The fact that the Talmud shares that story is the Talmud's way of saying that Rava's position is wrong. Quoting the statement of Rava, then quoting the story of people who followed Rava's advice, tell it with disastrous results, Rava is wrong. So you see what's interesting over here? Now we have the poles. On one hand, you have the Rush, Rabbeinu Asher, who just quotes the Gemara verbatim. Rava is correct. A person should become inebriated on Purim until you don't know the difference between Ar Haman and Baruch Mordechai. You have, on the other hand, the Ran quoting the Rabbeinu Ephraim, who says, no, just the opposite. Again, the Ran's not saying not to drink, but the Ran is certainly saying no inebriation. Because look what happened when people followed the advice of Rava. Disastrous results. So here you have the two opposite ends of the spectrum. If you take a look at number five, so the Rambam, and the Rambam Kudarko, the Rambam always finding that middle ground. So the Rambam writes, he said, Keitzad chovas se'uda zu. What's the nature of Purim Su'uda? He says, Sheyochal basar, a person should eat meat. V'yitakein se'uda no'a kefiyasha timseyado. And you should have a nice meal in accordance with your means. V'shose yayin ad sheyishtaker v'yeyradeim b'shichrus. And the Rambam says something very interesting. What should you do? You should drink. You should drink until when? Until you get so tired, you fall asleep. And you fall asleep as a result of your inebriation. Now, why does the Rambam bring up falling asleep? Oh, so the Rambam will say, look, I would like to fulfill the dictum of Rava. Rava said a person should drink until they don't know the difference between cursed is... No, I haven't been drinking. But cursed is Haman and blessed is Mordechai. The Rambam says, wonderful. Who says that that means you have to fall into an inebriated stupor? All it means is if you go to sleep. And if you fall asleep, guess what? You don't know the difference between Ar Haman and Baruch Mordechai. So the Rambam just simply seems to say, is drink a little bit more than you perhaps you're normally accustomed to. You'll get very drowsy, very groggy, you'll fall asleep, and at the end of the day, you fulfilled Rava's dictum. So the Rambam is trying to find that middle ground between the Rush on one end and the Ran, Rabbeinu Ephraim, on the other. And there are many others who quote this same idea. If you look at number 6, I put a lot more on here than what we're going to do, but I just wanted to show you this. So the Karban Nisanal, one of the commentaries on the Talmud, explains, he says, it can't be that you're supposed to drink until you don't know the difference between Ar Haman and Baruch Mordechai, because to not know the difference between Ar Haman and Baruch Mordechai means what? Means what? That you don't know the difference between right and wrong. And the Karban Nisanal says, there is no way that halacha would ever sanction that level of inebriation. We have a name for that level of inebriation, says the Karban Nisanal. You know what we call that? Dizeu higio lishichruso shel lot. He said, we call that lot drunk. What does it mean to get lot drunk? To get lot drunk means literally a person does not know the difference between right and wrong. What is it making reference to? It's making reference to after Sodom and Amorah were destroyed, Lot is alone with his daughters in a cave. The daughters get him drunk, and on two successive nights, he sleeps with both of his daughters, impregnates both of his daughters. And again, the Torah says, when he woke up in the morning, he didn't even realize what it was that occurred. That's called Lot drunk. When a person is so drunk that they don't know they're seeing right and wrong, and that the Karban Nisanal says, the halacha would never sanction. So again, the Rambam is building up other allies over here. The Meiri says the same basic idea. He says in number 7, he says the following, Mikol Makom, look at the second line, Anu Mitzein Anu Mitzavin Lishtaker, Ula Hafchis Atzmenu Mitoch Simcha Shalon Itztavinu Asimcha Shalholulus Vishal Shtus Ela B'Simcha Shaltanu. So the Meiri takes the opinion that, okay, it's good to drink, but it can't lead one to silly behavior, because Purim is not about silly pleasure, silly enjoyment, but rather Purim is about Kedusha, Purim is about purity. The Beis Yosef writes this as well. He writes in number 8, he says, Kasav ba'archos, chayim chayiv inish la'asume, puri ach shelo yishtaker, doesn't mean you should get drunk. Shashichrus iser gamar. So the Beis Yosef, Rav Yosef Karo, has even stronger words, and he says that you can't even get drunk. Why? Because drinking, because drunkenness is an absolute prohibition. There is no greater avera than drunkenness. Why? Shugorim legili arayos. It could cause immorality. Shvichos damim, God forbid, murder. Vekama averos zulasan. And many other averos as well. Bless you. Therefore, what does Rav Yosef Karo suggest? Ach sheyishta yoser milimudo ma'at. Drink a little bit more than what you're normally accustomed to. So therefore, we see essentially three different camps. You see the Rush camp, the Rabbeinu Asher camp, who essentially understands Rava's statement as is, namely, drink on Purim until you don't know the difference between Ar Haman and Baruch Mordechai. That's first approach, literalist approach. Second approach, the Ran, Rabbeinu Ephraim, who go to the opposite extreme, that Rava's statement is blunted by the story of Rabba and Rabbi Zera that follows immediately after, and therefore the actual takeaway message is, don't get drunk. Middle position, which is the Rambam, Karban Nisanal, the Meiri, Rav Yosef Karo, that essentially drink a little bit more than you're normally accustomed to, drink until you fall asleep, but make sure that whatever you drink, you are still in absolute control. Because the moment that a person loses, again, it doesn't mean that a person has to be able to, bless you, to operate heavy machinery, but what it does mean is that a person has to be in a state where they're able to control their actions, they're able to see a difference between right and wrong, and they're able to understand exactly what it is that they're doing. So three schools of thought, two on polar opposite, one in the middle. How do we paskin? So it's interesting to see what the Shulchan Aruch says over here. Number 9. So the Shulchan Aruch writes, Chayiv inish levasumi bepurya. Adlo yada bein ara hamala barach Mordechai. A person is obligated. Again, he quotes, it's interesting that this, now remember, I just want to point out to you, the Shulchan Aruch and the Beis Yosef, 8 and 9 are the same exact author, right? They're both, Beis Yosef is the name of the commentary that Rav Yosef Karo wrote on the tour, and the Shulchan Aruch is Rav Yosef Karo's codification of Halacha, same exact author. Now, not always what the Mechaber, what we call Rav Yosef Karo the Mechaber, the Svardim call Rav Yosef Karo Maran or Maran HaMechaber, because for Svardim, Rav Yosef Karo next to Rav Adji Yosef. The truth is, in the Svardim community, those were the two Marans. So, but for Ashkenazim, we call them the Mechaber because we often don't paskin like what the Mechaber writes. In any event, the Mechaber doesn't always follow through. Meaning, just because he writes something in his commentary on the tour does not automatically mean that that trickles down to his codification halacha. But more often than not, it does. It's interesting to note that here, it does not. Because in number 8, he told us, just drink a little bit more than what you're normally accustomed to. And yet in the codification of halacha number 9, he actually quotes the Gemara, quotes Rava verbatim. Chayiv inish levasume beporia ad delo yada bein araham ala barach Mordechai. He quotes the statement of Rava that a person is obligated to drink to become inebriated on permanent, so I don't know, there's an araham ala barach Mordechai. And then he stops. Now, but it goes on. Haggah, now remember Haggah, I've mentioned this many times before, but I'll mention it once more. These are the footnotes of Rav Moshe Isis. The Mechaber lives in the 1500s, Sephardic Posek. Ramah lives in the 1630s, or writes in the 1630s. He lives in Krakow, Poland. He takes the Shulchan Aruch and essentially adds in Ashkenazic footnotes. More often than not, Ashkenazic and Sephardic practice align. There's not a disagreement. But when there is a disagreement, Rav Moshe Isis comes along and puts in his Ashkenazic footnotes. See, he writes over here, look what he writes, V'yesh omrim, de'ein tzarech lishtaker kol kach. So the Ramah says, hold on, you don't have to get that drunk. El yishte yoser milimudo, but rather drink a little bit more than you're normally accustomed to, viyashen, and go to sleep. Umitoch sheyashen, eni odeh ben araham ala barach Mordechai. Interestingly enough, you have Rav Moshe Isis de Ramah quoting from the Rambam, which is just interesting. Okay, so go to sleep, you won't know this in araham ala barach Mordechai, but look how he ends. Ve'echad hamarbe, ve'echad hamamit, o bilvad sheyachavein libo l'shamayim. But the Ramah says, look, at the end of the day, this is actually one of the, you know, there are some areas in Judaism where no matter what you do, you're covered. Right? No matter what you do, there's someone who says, like, what you're doing. You know, a good example of this, there's always an interest. Yeah, it's good to have some of these situations. You know, like, simple examples of this are, like, you know, there's always an interesting discussion that comes up on Matzei Shabbos Chanukah as to the order of menorah versus havdalah. So there's halachic opinions that go both ways. And the Mishnah Berurah says, look, pretty much, you can do whatever you want to do, and good news is, you're covered. So the Ramah says, you want to drink a little, you want to drink a lot. There are halachic opinions that support everything, but with one important caveat, ubilvad sheyachavein libo l'shamayim. But you have to have in mind, you have to make sure that what you're doing is a pursuit in ruchnius, that what you're doing somehow is mekadesh shem shamayim. So this statement of the Ramah is very bothersome. Is very bothersome. Because before we saw this, we would have thought that drunkenness, by definition, is the antithesis of Kiddush Shem Shamayim. Meaning, if the Ramah would have said that, you know what, you could drink a lot, you could drink a little, just be responsible. I hear that. Just make sure you don't do anything egregious. I hear that. Don't get yourself into trouble. Makes a lot of sense. But the idea that the Ramah says, if you want to drink a lot, you want to drink a little, it's okay. Obilvat sheyachavein libo l'shamayim. Almost as if he's telling us that within the act of drinking itself is some type of spiritual avoda. See, you understand what I'm getting at over here? The Ramah could have just said, like everyone before him said, that you don't get lot drunk. Don't get irresponsibly drunk. Don't do something that's, God forbid, going to be sinful or aver. I understand. But Ramah is saying, no, make sure that in your drinking, you're mechavin libo l'shamayim. That some way, somehow, what you're doing is a spiritual pursuit. So the question, of course, becomes, well, what is that spiritual pursuit that the Ramah is referring to? And this is important. Because whether a person drinks or doesn't drink on Purim, as I said to you before, the importance of halacha is that halacha is the mechanism through which the rabbis express to us moral, ethical, and spiritual lessons. As such, if the halacha is saying that drink, and even drink a lot, but just make sure that you're mechavin libo l'shamim, that you direct your heart to God, that must mean that within the drinking itself, within this is avoda, it's an avoda, somehow there's a connection, there's a spiritual avenue in this. So what is that? So in part one, just so you keep our eye on the ball here, so in part one, we've established the halachic framework of this particular mitzvah. We've seen again the extremes, we've seen the middle, and now we've seen the psak of the Mechaber of Yosef Karo. So if you're a Sephardic Jew, you just go and you live up to the statement of Rava. If you're Ashkenazic, you have a little bit more of a limitation, but the idea that Rama ends off with saying, a lot, a little, it's whatever you want, we're all adults, whatever you want to do. However, again, so now that we've established the halachic framework, let's try to establish the hashkafic framework. So what is the hashkafa? What is like the outlook? What is the idea? What is it that we're supposed to learn from this drinking on Purim? So I want to share with you two approaches. One is by Rav Kook, and one is by Rabbi Nachman of Breslov. So take a look at number 10. This is from Rav Kook. So Rav Kook has wrote a sefer called Orot, literally lights, and in it he has multiple different sections that he discusses, Yamim Tovim as well as everything else. So actually this Rav Kook that we're going to quote today, or we're going to quote right now, is actually going to sound very similar to a Rav Kook that we learned by Hanukkah time. So look what Rav Kook writes, and this is part of a much larger piece. I just did a little bit of cutting and pasting here. So he quotes the Gemara that says, Nichnas Yayin Yatsa Sod. When wine comes in, secrets come out. So, you know, the Gemara is a famous Gemara that says that you can tell a lot about a person in three things, right? Koso, kiso, kaso. How does a person act when they drink? How does a person spend their money? And how does a person react when things don't go their way? Because, you know, it's very easy to go ahead and maintain your composure when things are good and when everyone's doing what you want. How do you act ultimately when things don't go your way is an incredible testament to your character. So how you react when you get upset, how you spend your money, and how you drink. The Gemara follows up on that and says, Nichnas yayin yatsa sod. Wine comes in, secrets come out. So remember, again, on a basic level, the way we understand that Gemara is that every person has secrets. Every person has things that they don't share with other people. And by the way, that's a good thing. That's actually a good thing. You know, I think I mentioned this in one of the past years. You know, we live in an age, excuse me, of like verbal diarrhea. Everybody has to say everything to everyone, and they have to share every single thing, and they have to disclose every. It's not true. There are certain things that are your business and only your business, certain things that should remain within you, and you should not be posting or sharing or tweeting or blogging or doing any of those things. So we all have our things that we keep to ourselves. However, the Gemara says, Nichnas yayin yasa sod. So when wine comes in, often those personal barricades or barriers are broken down, and sometimes the things that I hold inside come out. But Rav Kook sees it differently. Rav Kook says, "Umaod anu tzrichin bechayenu. How badly do we each need it? Shesodos hane'elamim yetsu v'yiskalu. We need the secrets. We need the secrets on the inside to come out and to be revealed. Ayidei giluyim esasodos nakir esatzmenu. Because sometimes it's only through the revelation of secrets that we come to understand ourselves. Nakir esma shechavui bikirbenu. We come to recognize that which is hidden inside. Bishash, I'll explain this in just a moment. Bishash anachnu novo loosa bechina shalivasume adilo yada. When we get to the point that literally we are intoxicated until we do not know, niftar lefachos lishaa. Mikol oson hayedios hamatos osanu. We will be freed from all of those ideologies that sometimes hold us back. Hamolichos osanu kishivuyim ve'in liftos, that keep us captive and that cannot be redeemed. Ke'asirim ve'in lahatir, bound without being released. V'hayedios hamatos halalu hein mastiros mimeno asayizos. Rav Kook here is saying two dramatic things. Number one, Rav Kook says, and let's go a little bit out of order. Rav Kook says that, you know, there are certain things that there are certain, we'll call it certain realities that we create for ourselves. Certain glass ceilings that we create for ourselves. I could only accomplish it. And by the way, you should know, just as an aside, when you have created glass, you know, people who create glass ceilings for themselves very often create glass ceilings for their children as well. Right? It always breaks my heart when you sometimes hear a parent say, ah, my child can't do this or my child can't handle this. Now, sometimes the child can't because of certain realities, but very often parents impose their own self-imposed limitations on their children as well. My child can't handle this rigorous course of study because they can't do. How do you know? How do you know? Let them try. So just an aside, but coming back to the individual, Rav Kook says that we put shackles on ourselves. We put shackles. Now, there's a good reason psychologically why we put shackles on ourselves. And why is that? Safety. Because the truth is, if I create the glass ceiling, there's no expectation of me to go any further. And by the way, this is true in every area of life. It's true in relationships, it's true in marriages, it's true in parenting, it's true in Adam Lamakom, it's true in everything. It is so much easier to say, this is what I can do, this is what I'm capable of, and that's it. So if I say, if I put the bar here, I put the ceiling here, there's no expectation of me to go above that because I've already created the ceiling. And Rav Kook says, we do this to ourselves all the time in life. We create these glass ceilings, we create these obstacles, or not really even obstacles, they're just walls. They're barriers by which I say, I cannot can until here and nothing more. And if Cook says, this is what holds us hostage in life. You know, we often think that the reason we don't accomplish what we want to accomplish is because of external factors. Rav Kook says it's not true. 99% of the time, the reason we don't accomplish the things we want to accomplish in life is because of ourselves. Because we sabotage, because we undermine, or because simply we don't try hard enough to accomplish the things we want to do. Therefore, says Rav Kook something amazing. We're all held hostage by these self-imposed constraints, by these self-imposed glass ceilings. And Rav Kook says the other, therefore, Chayiv Inish Levasume Bepurya Ad Dilo Yada. Until you don't know from what? Until you don't know from your life constraints, and until you don't know from your life shackles. You know, it's an amazing thing. HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave us a gift of alcohol. It is a gift, right? Because what happens? A person has something to drink, and what happens? There's a room full of Nazirim. Everybody's a Nazir here. Right? Okay, so what happens? So what happens is, you know what? The world looks a little bit better. By the way, it's not a joke. HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave that to us as a matana. You know, the Gemara Moed Katan says that, you know why HaKadosh Baruch Hu created grapes? HaKadosh Baruch Hu says to make wine. And why did HaKadosh Baruch Hu make wine? The Gemara says, for avelim, for mourners. For mourners. It used to be the practice in Talmudic times that when a person would come back from the cemetery after burying a loved one, they would give them a kos shel tanchumin. They would give them a huge cup of wine, and they would sit there with the mourner while they drank it, because the Kaddish Baruch Hu gave us something to be able, use properly and responsibly, to take the edge off life. Because the Kaddish Baruch Hu realized that life could get difficult, therefore there is this thing to take the edge off life. And the amazing part is that when a person drinks, says Rav Kook, suddenly again, my mind is a little bit open. Often when we're totally sober, so we're inhibited, right? We have our barriers up, our glass ceilings are intact, our shackles are on, I know what I can do, I know what I can't do, and don't try to convince me otherwise. Says Rav Kook, on Purim, Chayiv Inish Levasumei Bepurya, we drink on Purim, why? It's interesting, he does a little bit of editing on the phrase, Ad dilo yada, until you don't know. Don't know what? Until you are no longer cognizant of your self-imposed glass ceilings, of your self-imposed shackles. Sometimes you need a little bit of help to see past the imposed barriers that we put upon ourselves in life, to see past your own glass ceilings. And Rav Kook takes it a step further. He says, the amazing part is, he says, yes, Nichnas Yayin Yatza Sod. Yatza Sod. Rav Kook says, what's the greatest secret that we each possess? What's the greatest secret that we each harbor? The greatest secret that we possess is the secret of personal greatness. The greatest secret we possess is that we each have the ability to be something and someone magnificent in this world. That we need not settle for mediocrity. We need not settle for getting by. And that's mediocrity in any area of life you want to apply it to. We need not settle for just being average. We each have the ability to be mitzionim, to be excellent. Again, in dramatically different ways. Our excellence, our personal excellence, manifests itself in different ways for different people. But says Rav Kook, that is the ultimate secret. And you know what's so tragic? Sometimes that secret is so well kept. That secret is buried so incredibly deep that we forget even how to access it. Therefore, says Rav Kook, this is the mitzvah of Purim. Chayiv inish levasume bepuria ad delo yada. For one day out of the year. For one day out of the year. The rest of the life, we shackle ourselves, we compromise ourselves, we put up our glass ceilings. For one day, we knock them all down. For one day. Now, it's our choice if we choose to build them back up on Shushan Purim, or if we choose to keep them back down. But for one day, we knock them all down. We bring down all the glass ceilings, we release ourselves from all the shackles, and nichnas yayin yotzeh sod, we're honest with ourselves and we see the true greatness that we really possess. It's there. It's there. Now that I see it, the question I have to ask myself is, ultimately, am I going to use it? Am I going to access it? And if you remember, again, the reason I said this is similar, because if you remember that Rav Kook said a very similar idea by Hanukkah. Remember again the Rav Kook by Hanukkah? Rav Kook spoke about the Pach Shemen. And we were focusing on why is it that everyone is so fixated on the Pach Shemen, on the miracle of the one cruse of oil, but no one's really that fixated on the military victory. So remember again, Rav Kook said, because the Pach Shemen represents the miracle of the human condition. That no matter how much I go ahead and I sully myself, no matter how much I tarnish my identity, my spirituality, my soul, there's always that Pach Shemen Hamunach Bechosamo Shal Kohen Gadol. There is always that cruise of untainted, beautiful oil of soulful potential that exists within each of us that is just waiting for me to break the seal. So it's interesting that Rav Kook uses this same ideology, not just by Hanukkah, but also by Purim as well. Chayiv in the Shalasur and Purim, we drink in order to get to the state of Ad Delo Yada. I don't know from constraints, again, healthy constraints. I don't know from barriers. I don't know from shackles. I don't know from glass ceilings. I don't know from self-imposed life walls. I now, Nich Nasayin Yatza Sod, I've discovered the secret of myself. And the secret of myself, maybe going back to Hanukkah, I found my Pach Shemen. The secret of myself is I know that I possess such potential for greatness, boundless potential for holiness, and a true ability to be great. Now the question is, do I want to truly access it? Do I want to truly build on it? Do I want to truly use it? Yes. So the Gemara seems to apply it to men. There's a lot of discussion in the poskim about whether or not there is a mitzvah for women to drink. So there's a big machlokes about it, a big interesting dispute. It seems to be that the issue, although maybe we'll do that topic for next year, that might be an interesting topic, it seems to be the issue borders on tznius issues as well, which, although there are tznius issues for men as well, obviously they manifest differently for men versus women. So it seems to be that the consensus that the Gemara is talking towards men. So look at number two. So that's Rav Kook. That's Rav Kook. Although, again, I want to be clear. The halacha in no way says that a woman can't drink. That's not what the halacha says at all. It's just the drunkenness piece. There seems to be a dispute among the poskim as to whether or not that piece applies to him. But the drinking piece, as part of su'udas purim, as part of mishta v'simcha, that no one disagrees. Because just like women are obligated in su'udas purim, in having the celebratory meal, so part of that celebratory meal is wine as well. So that's Rav Kook. So remember, and again, now we've moved past the halacha of the mitzvah into the hashkafa of the mitzvah. So in the hashkafa of the mitzvah, now we have Rav Kook saying that we're trying to drink in order to break down our glass ceilings, our barriers, take off our life shackles, all in order to be able to find the sod, the great secret of our personal spirituality that resides within that very often in life we have a lot of difficulty accessing because we're all too conscious and all too aware of the barriers we've built. So when you drink a little bit, you're able to bring down the unhealthy barriers and you're able to go ahead and access the sod. It's interesting, by the way, Rav Kook actually brings it a little bit further. Rav Kook says that that's also the meaning of Ad lo yada, he lopped off Bein Arahamun LeBarach Mordechai. So Rav Kook actually says, he says that very often in life we like to classify ourselves. Some people classify themselves as a tzaddik, as tzaddikim. Other people classify themselves as rishayim. And the truth is, classifying yourself either way is damaging. If you classify yourself as a tzaddik, who said? Right, meaning who crowned you? Right, what are you measuring that you feel that you're righteous? And of course, again, that's damaging because if a person classifies himself as a tzaddik, then there is no initiative or no impetus to grow. On the hand, if a person classifies themselves as a rasha, chas v'shalom, then a person feels there's damaged goods. If I'm damaged goods, then what could I possibly do with myself? Therefore, Rav Kook takes it a step further, and he says it's not just ad lo yada about your glass ceilings and shackles. But don't worry so much about how to classify yourself. Don't worry for today if you're a Haman or a Mordechai. Here's what you have to remember. No matter what you are, some of us are Haman, some of us are Mordechais, no matter what you are, Nichnasya and Yatza Sod, you have the beautiful secret within. And if you just find the courage to find that secret, open that secret, use that secret, build on that secret, you could accomplish great things. Now take a look at number 11. Now I want to broaden this discussion just for a little bit before we get to Rabbi Nachman. So if you take a look at number 11, it's not just drinking that's strange on Purim. It's not really, if you think about it, like if you're an outsider, if you look at Jewish holidays in general, like they make sense. You could see there's a rhythm to it, right? We go to shul, we daven, we eat, we go back to shul, we come home, we eat, we sleep a little bit, we have families. Meaning, like, I understand that there's an experience that every single Yom Tov is rooted in. I'm supposed to reflect on that experience, grow from that experience, but the way in which we observe the holidays are very logical. Purim is totally off the map. We're totally off the charts. Take a look at number 11. So we spoke about the drinking. There's another piece. Umashenagu lilbosh pirtzufim bepurim. That which people do, that they get dressed up. Pirtzufim is literally masks on Purim. They gever lovesh simlas isha. The isha klei gever. And even sometimes men dress up as women. Women dress up as men. Ein iser bedaver me'acher she'mecham el l'simcha ba'alma. There's no iser, there's no prohibition associated with it, since everyone has in mind just for simcha, just to celebrate. You skip a little bit, the Rama says, v'yishom da'asar, others say you're not allowed to do it. And in fact, again, he's quoting over here in number 12, there's a taz in Yeridea, and the taz in Yeridea brings down that it is absolutely prohibited. He quotes over here, if you look to the, I'm just skipping a little bit, in number 12, second line, middle of the line. The heavy rabbi Mashikasa ra mimitz le'esra la'asos kein, mipnei simchas chasan okala. So vashomea le'esra tevalo bracha. See, he writes over here, he's actually, the rabbi mimitz was speaking about people used to get dressed up, men as women or women as men, for shtick at a wedding. And the rabbi from mitz said that it's absolutely usher. You can't do it. So some take that same stand by Purim as well. Now, there's a very good reason to prohibit cross-dressing. What's the good reason to prohibit cross-dressing? It is a biblical prohibition. There is a biblical prohibition. The Torah says, Lo silbash gever simlas isha. The Torah says a man is not permitted to go ahead and dress up as a woman and vice versa. Why? Because HaKadosh Baruch Hu was nervous that it could lead ultimately to immoral acts. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu goes ahead and prohibits it. So now you have to understand how outrageous this is. So now you're taking something that for 364 days of the year is unequivocally prohibited. And not only is it unequivocally prohibited, it's biblically prohibited. And now we're saying you could do it on Purim. Why? Why? Because it's simcha. Come on, no harm done. Right? No harm done. It's not my intention for immorality. It's only my intention to go ahead and have a little bit of fun, to have a little bit of simcha. Where in the world do we ever see such a dispensation like this? That I'm just trying to have fun. suddenly that is actually a cogent halachic argument. I'm just looking to have fun, and therefore it's okay. So again, it's just another piece, and there are other examples of this. We don't have time to go into all of them. But here you see, again, so you have the drinking on Purim, which is excess, which normally we stay away from in Judaism, and many poskim still say you have to stay away from it on Purim as well. You have the dressing up in a way that is normally biblically prohibited, but because ultimately it's just for simcha, it's permitted. So what's happening here? Rabbi Nachman of Breslov has what I think is just such a beautiful and meaningful insight that I think helps to frame the entirety of Purim. If you look at number 13, Rabbi Nachman writes, this is from his Likutei Halachos. Actually, you know, Rabbi Nachman did not record any of his Torah. Rabbi Nachman did not write down any of his Torah. His Talmud Mufak, his primary disciple, Rabbi Nosson, went ahead and recorded all of his Torah. Now, Rabbi Nachman's Torah is compiled in what's called Likutei Moharan. Literally, the collections of Moharan is Moreinu Harav, Rabbi Nachman. Likutei Moharan, most of it, is not arranged like in any kind of order. It's arranged in statements, but those statements don't necessarily follow a particular theme or a particular subject. It's a little bit random. So what's amazing about Rabbi Nachman's works is that sometimes you'll be learning A, and you'll find something that's just so ridiculously dramatic pertaining to a totally different topic. So just to give you the context, this is from Hilchos Nefilas Apayim. Rabbi Nachman over here is talking about the laws of Tachanun. The laws of Tachanun, right? Tachanun is the supplicatory prayer that we recite after Shemona Esrei, where we fall on our arm. So in the middle of the laws of Tachanun, Rabbi Nachman has this piece about Purim. So look what he writes. He says, V'zeh b'chinas gadol, haflagas ha-simcha ma'od, shenogim kol Yisrael b'Purim, laharbos az b'simcha gadol ma'od. Rabbi Nachman says, the mitzvah, the obligation on Purim, is to go ahead and intensify and amplify incredible amounts of simcha. And we do all, look what Rabbi Nachman writes, we do all kinds of tzchok and tzchok. Tzchok and tzchok mean what? Essentially, silliness. Silliness, tzchok means laughter, tzchok means playfulness, but these words of tzchok and tzchok usually are used in a context of silliness. We do all kinds of silliness. Why? B'shvil harbos ha-simcha, in order to amplify and intensify our simcha. Ki ikar mitzvahs Purim hu ha-simcha. Rabbi Nachman, and this is a very strong statement, Rabbi Nachman says that the ikar mitzvah of Purim is simcha. The ikar mitzvah of Purim is simcha. Va'al kein, osim kol minei schok, he repeats it again. Therefore, we do all kinds of schok. Umile dishtusa. Mile dishtusa means what? Shtus, silliness. Again, same thing. Va'osim as ma'asa shichrus, and we even get drunk. Ushtus b'shilasimcha, all to be happy. It's amazing. So Rabbi Nachman, by the way, is validating what we were thinking. That this is shtuyot, right? What's going on over here? Again, we love it, we enjoy it, but it is a little bit strange, the kind of stuff we do on a day that's supposed to be a Yom Tov. And Rabbi Nachman says, no, it's important, it's the most important part, because the most important aspect of Purim is Simcha. Why? Look what Rabbi Nachman writes here. He says, Ki Isa B'divrei Rabbeinu. This is actually, remember, this is Rabbi Nosson quoting Rabbi Nachman, because it's written in the words of our master, Rabbi Nachman's writings, B'kam makomos, kama asharos kidolos. Rabbi Nachman wrote many, many stern warnings, Shetzarech ha'adam lahargil es atzmo lihios b'simcha tamid. Remember, Rabbi Nachman is the famous creator of that statement of mitzvah gedola lihios b'simcha tamid. So Rabbi Nosson writes, it's amazing how much emphasis that Rabbi Nachman put on simcha. Look what he writes. V'isa b'dvar hakidoshim she'ef. Listen to this. Rabbi Nachman wrote she'efshar lihios b'simcha. Ki im al yidei mili dishtusa daika. Rabbi Nachman writes that it's virtually impossible to be besimcha, to be happy in life, right? To be in a state of happiness without a little bit of silliness. Why not? Listen to this. Ki machmas sheteva ha'adam nimshach achar ha'atzvus ma'ot. Rabbi Nachman says, our predisposition is for sadness. The truth is, man at his core is sad. Man at his core is morose. Now, why? Is that because we're depressing individuals? No. Ki kol adam male yisurin, viyagonos, ki yadua l'chol echad ve'echad. Because every single person has challenges. There is not a person in life who does not have their challenges. Some big challenges, some small challenges, some personal challenges, familial challenges, whatever challenges we have. Every person has their challenges. And therefore, Rabbi Nachman says, because we each have our challenges, and therefore, and often as we all know, it's not like the pshat that you leave your challenges at home or you leave your challenges at work. Very often our challenges follow us wherever we go in life, which means wherever I'm walking, wherever I'm doing, my challenges and that yoke of life challenges around my neck. He says, Alkein tzrichin la'achriach es atzmo b'chalakochos lihios b'simcha. Therefore, says Rabbi Nachman, because almost the natural state of man is to be sad. Not sad because I want to be sad, but sad because I feel overwhelmed by the enormity of my circumstances. And I feel overwhelmed by the challenges that I have to face. And by the way, for the Jew, it's even more complicated. Because for the Jew, not only do I have my personal circumstances, but what? We also bear our national circumstances. You know, it's amazing. I'm sure many of you had the opportunity to listen to the Prime Minister address Congress yesterday. And it was, I thought that Mashiach was going to come literally right after it. And I'll tell you why, just as an aside. I don't know if anyone picked up on this. What's amazing is, you know, Netanyahu quoted from the Megillah, which everyone forecasted he did. He did it 2 years ago at APAC also, which was wonderful. It was the same line. He spoke about the idea that we, you know, everyone saw it. And he spoke about Esther Amalka had the courage. You know what was amazing? What was amazing is after he spoke about Esther Amalka, so what happened? He got a standing ovation. And I thought to myself, you know what? Esther Amalka just got a standing ovation in the Congress. Isn't that absolutely amazing? Isn't it absolutely amazing that 2,500 years later, Esther Hamalka is getting a standing ovation for her incredible courage? It's absolutely amazing. But you know what? When all of the fanfare dies down, so the truth is, as part of a nation, there is a very serious threat that looms over Eretz Yisrael and Klal Yisrael. One speech, no matter how wonderful, how dramatic, it's not going to take care of it. In fact, again, we see that now it caused the other powers to double down in their efforts to pursue a bet. I'm not getting political, but I'm just pointing out, as an individual, I go ahead and I carry my own peckle, and then as part of a nation, every single day, I worry about the future of Klal Yisrael, and it's easy to be glib and say, HaKadosh Baruch Hu will help. HaKadosh Baruch Hu always helps. And we always know that Netzach Yisrael lo yishaker. Klal Yisrael is eternal. But that doesn't mean that we don't lose people, and it doesn't mean we don't suffer setbacks, and it doesn't mean that we don't encounter challenges. Am Yisrael, as a nation, will always endure. But there is always an existential threat to the individual, to the family. It's always there. So Rabbi Nachman says, when you think about this, and the truth is, the way we get by is we often choose not to think about this, but if we go ahead and I think about my personal troubles, and I think about Klal Yisrael's troubles, and you know, even if you have an opportunity where your personal troubles are not so acute, if you're in a good place like that, Klal Yisrael's troubles are always acute. They're always acute. They're always dramatic. Rabbi Nachman says, by definition, I'm going to be in a state of atzilus. I'm going to be sad. I'm sad because not sad like morose or depressed, but whenever you have a lot on your mind, it just bears down on you. Therefore, he says, Rabbi Nachman, Alkein, tzrichen lachriach es atzmo b'chalakochos lios b'simcha. Therefore, you must marshal all of the resources possible in order to be simcha, and therefore, v'ikar asimcha i'afshar lios kiim al yidei mili deshtusa. So listen to the psychology Rabbi Nachman is espousing, and it's amazing. Rabbi Nachman says, therefore, the only way to go ahead and really be happy is with a little bit of silliness. Because what does, we all have that, but we all have moments like this, where let's say you see something silly, you hear something silly, someone says something silly, and what do? Now, why is it funny? Right? It's out of, and also, it's out of the norm. Meaning, it is such a break with reality that it takes you out of your reality a little bit, and is therefore able to remove you from all of the things that are part, meaning reality is not funny. Reality is not funny, reality is very serious, and reality sometimes is very overwhelming. Says Rabbi Nachman, sometimes the only way to find a little bit of simcha is to make a little crack in the facade of your reality and to escape a little bit, not long, if you escape too long, you're in trouble also. Escape a little bit into the world of silliness, just to be able to feel a little bit of unadulterated simcha. And says Rabbi Nachman, so that's what we do on Purim. He says, I'm sorry, Kimosha Shamati Bizrachal Rachel. Take a look at one more piece, and then we'll stop. He says, paragraph Dalit. Vizehu, last page. Vizehu inyan mashay nogin calls dikim agidolam amba for some him. Shahayu biyamenu apirov, hayalam anoshe kimoshe batchonim, vosinay kominate skok, ushtus kimafursam. And we know that's why even great tzaddikim throughout the ages on Purim. On Purim, you know, they always engaged, they always had a batchan, someone telling jokes, you know, by the Hasidim. There's a Purim Rebbe, right? Something no one would ever do to parrot or to makta. But again, they always had these ways of bringing a little bit of silliness. V'akol b'shul simcha, ki ein dav, look what Rabbi Nachman says, ki ein davar mazik la'avodas Hashem, kimo ha'atzvos. There is nothing more damaging to one's service of God than sadness. And Rabbi Nachman says, look, we've had a lot of sadness because of the great overwhelming nature of our diaspora. That's affected us physically, affected us spiritually, and affected us financially. That therefore, sometimes the only way to find a little bit of simcha is through the silliness. See, right over here, he says, that's why very often the Gemara talks about that before certain Tamdi Chachamim would get up to give shir, they would go out and they would say a joke in order to kind of get people to relax a little bit, to break the facade and the reality. So Rabbi Nachman says something absolutely amazing. So Rabbi Nachman says, do you want to know why we do all of this outrageous stuff on Purim? And by the way, although Rabbi Nachman, he included drinking over here, the drinking, the costumes, all the things that seem to make no sense, because what we're trying to highlight is that you have to be besimcha even when life is not perfect. The big challenge in life is that people often think that they hinge their simcha on multiple things falling into place. I will be happy when. And you can fill in the blanks, whatever the when is. When my marriage is like this, when my kids are like this, when I have this amount of money, when I get to purchase this, when I get to go here. And we have the whole list of things. This will make me happy. You know, if you wait to be happy until all of the things on your happy list are fulfilled, you know what's going to happen? You know what's going to happen? Person's never happy. Because that list, because life is never in perfect equilibrium, no one gets all the things that they want, even if they're good things. And therefore, says Rabbi Nachman, what we try to pursue on Purim is it almost like a contrived reality to show people that, you know what? You can be happy even with your personal peckle. You could be happy even with the national peckle. You could be happy even when life is difficult and even when life is imperfect if you work hard enough. And I'll amplify this a little bit more. You know, that's the whole story. I've mentioned this before in Shiurim. That's the whole story of Esther Amalka. Right? Remember, again, I've always mentioned that, I've mentioned all the Purim Shiurim, that the Megillah ends, and we launch into Shoshanas Yaakov, and we're all happy, it's all wonderful. And it's a great, wonderful Yom Tov for everyone but Esther and Mordechai. Right? Because at the end of the day, the Jews are celebrating and they're feasting and they're saved and the families are secure. And Esther's a young woman. She spends the rest of her life together with a man with whom she did not choose. That is the life she is consigned to. But yet again, that's the message of Purim. That sometimes there's the ability to find simcha even in the most imperfect of circumstances. If you're looking for it, and you're willing to do it. And I'll amplify it even more. Rabbi Nachman of Breslov died at the age of 39 years old. Rabbi Nachman died a young man. And before Rabbi Nachman died, he lost two children in infancy. Rabbi Nachman was a great grandson of the Baal Shem Tov HaKadosh. He had a very, very, very difficult and short life. And yet what Rabbi Nachman says is, you know what? If you want to find simcha, and what really Rabbi Nachman is saying is, if you want simcha in life, don't expect anyone to give you simcha. Don't expect anyone to deliver simcha to you. If you want simcha in life, you have to go out and find it. You have to go out and create it. And sometimes the way you need to do that is first with a little bit of silliness. Because sometimes you know what a little bit of silliness is good for? A little bit of silliness just puts a smile on your face. Even if you say, wow, that was so stupid. Right? It's okay. Right? Because what it does is it puts a smile on your face. It makes a little crack in the facade of reality and allows you to feel just those few moments of simcha, and allows you to realize that, you know what? I can be happy even when life is imperfect. So what comes out over here is, if we bring this all together, so it turns out that, yes, we focused on the halacha of drinking on Purim. But whether you drink or whether you don't drink is really irrelevant. Like the Rama said, Echad hamarba ve'echad hamamit. Whether you drink a lot, you drink a little. Ubilvat shi'echavin libo l'shama. I would take it a step further. I would think that the Rama could actually say, whether you drink a lot, or whether you drink a little, or whether you drink nothing at all. Ubilvat shi'echavin libo l'shamayim. Take the message of drinking with you throughout Purim. And what is that message of drinking? Again, with this we'll conclude, two messages. Number one, Rav Kook teaches us that the message of drinking is that sometimes we impose our glass ceilings, barriers, and shackles upon us. Find the courage to let go, to break them, to knock them down, even just for one day. Find the courage of nichnas yayin, yatsa sod. Find the great secret that we've each been keeping all of these years, the secret of our personal potential greatness. Whether you drink a lot, whether you need the alcohol to help you to find that, or you can find that on your own, take that message, take that opportunity of Purim. And number two, says Rabbi Nachman, it's okay to be a little bit silly. It's okay to be, we don't always have to be serious. We could be a little bit silly, because sometimes silliness is the greatest bracha. Sometimes silliness allows us to put a little bit of a smile on our face and enables us to feel happy in what is sometimes otherwise a difficult and sometimes overwhelming personal and national existence. And in that moment of silliness, when we feel a little bit of happiness, so Rabbi Nachman tells us, let us remember that happiness is a decision we make. Happiness is something we decide if we want to be, not have. You don't have happiness. You are happy. So you make a decision to be happy or not to be happy. That is the decision we make. And lest we think that I can only be happy once everything falls into place, Purim dispels that. And Purim says that with a little bit of silliness, suddenly you feel incredibly happy. And the takeaway message is, says Rabbi Nachman, that Eve, don't wait until life is perfect on a personal and national level to be happy, but find the happiness even in the most imperfect of circumstances, as Esther Amalka did, as Mordechai HaTzadik did, as Jews throughout the generations have done. We use the silliness as a little bit of a crutch to break through that facade, ultimately, of sometimes overbearing pressure, overbearing weight. But find the happiness, even in the imperfect of circumstances. So we should be zochem, Mir Tzashem, as we celebrate this Yom Tov of Purim. And again, to conclude with the words of the Rambam, Echad Hamar Beve Echad Hamamit, whether you drink a lot, whether you drink a little, whether you don't drink at all, let us all be zochem to ingest and to internalize the beautiful messages of Purim.